part of that, would someone else want to jump in on this, Grace or Maxie?
I mean, I can certainly, listen, Max, I could certainly make a suggestion in terms of how action-oriented approach might manifest, if you will. I think this was brought up earlier. You know, how much of the time and energy of this committee is spent on establishing policy? And I think that's probably the most important thing to me that the Pacifica National Board Programming Committee could do. I think getting into the minutia of programming is a bit problematic, but I think when you start to talk about some base level expectations in terms of tools to create effective programming, whether it's mandatory subscription to Radio Research Consortium data, whether it's requiring program directors to do quarterly reports to the LSB, things that would require action by station management, whether it be program directors or general managers, to inform the LSB about programming from an informed space, I think is vital. It would make for a more informed board. It would also require our program directors to be data-driven, research-based in their approach. I think you should also be putting expectations on the stations to either attend conferences or continue the education process and learning how to program. You know, I have given some webinars to the program directors in efforts to apply some best practices. We've also become members of the Public Radio Program Directors Association, which is important because it gives best practices around programming, everything from building news departments to creating public affairs programming, implementing clocks, some of the basic tools that make for good radio. I think this board would be, this committee, I should say, would be quite useful and action-oriented if it created policy to require our station's programmers to elevate their game to a point that is documented, it's measurable, and makes it convenient for the dispensing of information so that we're informed about how things are going. And that's a little wordy how I said it, but that's how I would suggest becoming action-oriented, if you will, but focusing on policy.
Well,
thank you for the feedback.
Well, also, I think that the kind of things we were developing for the past 6 or 7 months, that is, we were trying to develop modules or training modules for producers to individually, you know, have a tutorial that they can go to that would have the best things on the web that we can find that could actually help them as radio producers improve themselves. So, for example, there's a free course on podcasting that's held in Australia that I sent out recently an email about, which anybody can join. But the question there is to expose people, because Pacifica has a really good tradition of attention to that historically. I can go back into KPFA's history. They've done amazing stuff, KPFK, all the stations have. But we want to, you know, get the issue of people learning and getting into sound art. The podcasting issue, to me, is very important, because right now I think that one thing I'd like to see going forward is to bring – you know, professionals on who are involved with podcasting and have them talk to us, or people who are doing streaming and have them talk to us and, you know, get us thinking creatively about how we can do things differently and then have this part of what we're doing at each station to improve it, to improve the producers, to improve the individual producers coming in to do work.
So, Jim, if I may, to the staff.
Yeah.
That effort is being undertaken at the station level. I'm working with them. The PRPD membership is a big part of that. Like I said, I'm conducting webinars and conference calls with program directors and GMs on a weekly basis, usually. I'm about monthly now because of the pledge drives. But that sort of offering of information and best practices is really being indoctrinated right now at the station level. what I do think is plays off of what you're saying is it would be nice if these meetings included presentations from industry experts who could give us an understanding of the podcast environment. Is it realistic for Pacifica to delve into it? And if so, how? What are the cost factors? What should our expectations be? If we've got HD 2 and 3 opportunities that we want to experiment with, let's get someone in who can talk about how viable HD 2 and 3 are and what makes it viable if a station's doing it well, and how can we mimic some of the best practices in that area. There are all kinds of things I think that would be useful for this committee to be educated up about in terms of best practices and programming norms, if you will. And those things, I think, could be quite useful as we take that information back to our stations as representatives of the five units of Pacifica. So that's one thing I would think might be a useful tool. But I just wanted to be real clear that we've armed the PDs with resources in a way that I don't think has happened prior to. And I think it's important that they continue the road of becoming informed about those things, taking advantage of the tools. But I think there's an opportunity for the board, the committee in particular, to also get edification, if you will.
Well, I also think that since we haven't been doing this as a system for quite a long time, that is several decades, it's important to supplement what you're doing with other things that the rest of us can come up with, because if we're actually reaching out to universities in our signal areas or other people doing professional broadcasting, I think that this is something we should share with, you know, literally hundreds of people, including the producers. And getting back to Donald Goldmacher's question about what's the best way to organize, given our limited resources, the morning times or 7 to 9 or the drive time in the afternoon, I think that's an interesting question to have to ponder and come up with a solution, since we know that some stations have limited resources. What can be the best thing we can do to come up with a solution to that problem? I agree. That's a great thing to think about.
So, Jim, this is Donald again for the stack.
Yes, Donald.
Yeah. Thank you for affirming. I mentioned drive time as, if you will, a case study for something that we can wrap our heads around and our brains and our creativity around to think how best to improve drive time listening across every station. And I think underneath that are two things. One is, what is the skill level of people on those shows at that time, and are there things we can do to help those people improve their skills, which is what Maxie was just alluding to. And the other thing itself is the actual content. What is it we're putting on the air at some critical times of the day that, you know, radio professionals know are these are the times when most people are going to be listening to the radio. And when I use the term drive time, it doesn't mean people just listening in their cars. It means people waking up in the morning and listening in their homes, because as we know, a lot of our station's listeners are already retired. So they're not getting in a car, but they're getting into their kitchen and turning on the radio to make breakfast. So so that, those are two audiences right there during that, quote, 7 to 9 a.m. period and 4 to 6 p.m., if you will, or 4 to 7. So what I'm arguing is that we start to take a critical look at the content, and we can use that time frame as a case study and build out from there and see what we can do that will help. But I heard your point, Jim, about limited resources, and I want to respond to that very quickly by saying the following. So we have a drive time show in the morning called Upfront. It's on from 7 to 9 a.m., and those are two paid professional broadcasters who co-chair that show. And that, of course, is our biggest money raiser on KPFA over and over and over again in every pledge drive, and it has our biggest listenership. So the fact that we're paying two people is not an issue, because they more than pay for themselves, And in fact, they generate surplus revenue for the rest of the station. So that's the kind of thinking I would argue we want to start to infuse ourselves with.
All right. Maxie to the stack.
Yeah, Maxie.
Yeah, Donald, I want to confirm that I'm completely behind what you just said. You know, there are best practices about what a news information station should be doing to aggregate larger audiences in morning drive. And having a locally produced program that speaks specifically to the issues that matter in that community, that region, if you will, is a vital piece to it. And the fact that we've got Democracy Now, which is a headline national program to pair those morning shows up with, makes for a strong opportunity in the mornings. As someone who has built locally produced morning programs, highly successful ones, I recognize the value of what I call signature programming, and I think that's what Upfront represents. There's a reason why it drives audience and revenue in the way that it does. You nailed it on the head. It's professionally produced. Its content is rich and it's vibrant and it's useful for the audience that it serves. I would argue that that exists in all five of our markets. That opportunity is what I've emphasized to the stations that they really need to work on morning drive to pair up with Democracy Now and create a dynamic 1-2 punch for the morning that really does address the justice issues that are germane to the communities we serve and are so well produced that people feel good just about the presentation style, the content, and the overall production.
Sheriff Rostack?
Yes, Sheriff.
May I suggest that maybe for future meetings that one of a possible structure might be that we start with station updates, especially around best practices that have been in place and successful. Number two, discuss the national issues such as Maxie talked about, tool or guideline or requirement or expectation that we would like to see be put in place. And three, if possible, have a presentation by an industry expert or some kind of educational factor.
Okay, great idea. Anybody else to the stack?
Michael to the stack.
Michael
Novick at right. KPFK. I agree with what Maxie said. I agree with what Maxie said about the need for locally produced morning shows. I think that right now in KPFK we're airing Stephanie Miller, which is kind of an internet show. I don't think that's very helpful to a holding audience. I think one of the things we need to think about, I don't know about all of the signal areas, but here in Los Angeles, there are two NPR stations that have very big audiences. KPCC, which is owned by, I think, Minnesota Public Radio, moved into this area. It's extremely well-funded. Their budget is probably 8 to 10 times ours. And they air, All Things Considered or whatever the morning show is, in a couple of cycles. And they intermix it with some local news coverage. So I think having a local show that really digs deeper into local issues and also thinks about what kind of solutions people are coming up with would be really important to attract audiences with something different than they get from NPR. I don't think we have the capacity to beat NPR at their own game with that nationally syndicated show. So I think developing local programming, I think that some of what we could emulate from there is having a show that wraps news, public affairs, and some cultural coverage together, which I think the NPR people do very well. And I think we should think about how to do that from a Pacifica point of view and with things that might not get covered by, NPR from what's going on within our own communities. I do think that one thing to think about is co-hosting. I think most people, when they tune into radio in the morning, anticipate hearing co-hosts. and getting a little kind of variety in the voice of the hosts, and I think that leads to a more interesting show. I do think that here at KPFK, we had something called the People's School of Broadcasting. It's trying to train people in various aspects of radio, including, obviously, radio production, and also going out in the field to get sound that had some immediacy to it. So I think those are things that we should also think about, bringing in more of what's happening out in the communities and capturing that either live or, you know, within a morning magazine type show. I'll stop there. If somebody could fill me in on where we are in the it's not clear to me if there is an agenda for this meeting or where we are on it. I have a list of, like, programming committee report motions and then programming committee motions and consideration. And is this discussion tied to any of those points or is something else?
No, we've been talking.
Just the beginning of the call.
We're talking about ideas about programming questions and problems right now. Does anybody else want to address this? All right, is anybody?
Carol for the stack. I guess I have a couple questions. One was, Shira, I heard you kind of make a proposal, and I didn't know if now would be the appropriate time for us to consider a motion. And my second question would be, I don't know if most of the people on this call are newly elected or if they're from the last year. And so is it like, you know, this is kind of our first meeting, or is it kind of a mixture? And if it's kind of a mixture and a transition, we may want to wait until we have more people to make formal motions. That's what. So, Jim, can you answer?
Everybody who is on this call will be on the committee. I will be elected tomorrow to the committee, reelected. So that everybody on this call will be on the committee. And then the next meeting, perhaps, we can decide about the chair, vice chair, secretary issue. We have a schedule set up at KPTFX every 2 weeks. People can change that if they'd like. You know, the idea that Shira brought up is a great idea. You know, that's where we're at. I mean, you know, this, remember, we are transitioning. There are a whole bunch of other people I wasn't able to contact tonight. You know, we just have to get that all cleared up and get the list out and then share everything with everybody, and do all that stuff. So that's where we're at.
Thank you.
I wanted to say something about the issue of structure in terms of a morning show. Pacifica doesn't pay attention, in my experience, to these kind of questions about structuring, finessing, looking at the structure of shows. I will listen to Brian's show for that point, because I've heard many good things about Brian. One of my friends was the general manager at KPFA, Andrew Phillips, and he spoke very highly of Brian. I do know that one of the things that's different when you listen to Morning Edition is that Morning Edition is split up into several segments. Now, is that impossible for a Pacifica station to do? No, it isn't. The problem is that we don't have large amounts of people who are trained to go in and do very skilled 2-, 3-, 5-minute segments. The other question is that if you listen to NPR in New York, Morning Edition will intermingle cultural segments, usually on every 15 minutes there's a cultural segment. And as Maxie's known, has talked about before, they do extremely sophisticated radio imaging or advertising for promotion inside those 15-minute segments, directed and identifying the station. So at least 5 or 6 times you're hearing the station identified, plus they're shifting back and forth, and keeping in mind that the average person, when they listen to radio, only listens to radio for 2 to 3 minutes before they turn to another station or turn to, turn it off. And so that's something that people have to keep in mind when we're – and I don't think it's impossible for Pacifica to do the same thing. It just requires a lot of structure, a lot of organization, and frankly, the interns that come in from universities to Pacifica stations, one of the issues we raised in a motion we had last year was precisely to shift that to the programming departments in the station. So any interns coming in can be used to reinforce programming. In some stations, they're basically used to do shit work, and that I don't think is an appropriate use of their abilities. So there's lots of things we need to do in terms of really coming up with forms of how a morning show works and then figure out how we can improvise with the lack of resources we have.
Jim Maxey to the stack real quick.
Yes, Maxey.
The big difference from Morning Edition and perhaps other morning shows is it's a lot of pre-produced material. A lot of their stuff is produced the night before, the morning, the day before, and slotted. And so the high production value becomes evident because they do a lot of precise editing and manufacturing of their program. I was part of the team that developed the national morning show called The Takeaway, which understood to produce a cheaper morning drive program, you really needed to emphasize live conversation more. And so there are ways to get around the expense and the high production value and still have the kind of content that drives audience. The Takeaway is still on nationally across the country. And it is an example of taking the live interactive model and making that the format, if you will. You can still have a lot of different segments, not as many as Morning Edition would have, again, because they're not prepackaged, they're not tightly produced, and it's a little different model. But that can be done in a way that is more cost-effective for the resources we're dealing with. I also want to just say that we have to be very careful looking at interns as an option for production for a couple reasons. Number one, oftentimes their skill sets are not nearly where they need to be on air, particularly serving the markets that we're in. But secondly, there are, of late, a lot of rules around paying interns, and not using them without compensation. And so our stations would have to evaluate whether they can compensate, in a way that makes it, appropriate, to use them on our air in a professional capacity, if you will. Or even, just on our air, period. So those are just some things I thought were important to mention with respect
all
to
right. All right. Well, I just want to add to something that Maxey said, that in New York, when we had to lay a whole bunch of people off, one of the things that we were starting to do as a way to deal with this problem was to deal and reach out to the radio training programs in journalism schools locally. And so we had a cooperative relationship with a radio program, a radio journalism program at Columbia Journalism School, to bring in people to work with us. So those are, as far as I'm concerned, ways where we could get a perhaps more skilled intern than just simply some young kid who's a communications major who might be very skilled. And that raises the question of where we get talent.
How yeah, I like that model.
How do we create an open situation where we get Generation Z talent, you know, to come in and work the same way that all these stations, part of the issue is in the 60s, these were the hip, exciting places to be, the FM stations of Pacifica. That may not be the case right now with Generation Z people. So how do we recapture that enthusiasm and energy to have those kind of that energy coming into the stations and infusing it and replacing us, frankly? Anyway. Anybody else on the stack? Anybody else? Have we exhausted ourselves on this? Anybody else want to talk about the programming issue?
I want to talk about something completely different, related to programming.
Okay.
Although I agree with what Matthew said about morning shows, especially we need locally produced shows, I do think that there is a need for some national programming of Pacific Zone, which Moxie now no longer is. And I think that rather than looking at syndicated shows on existing Pacific stations, we need to think about...
We can't hear you,
All right.
I'll try again. I'm sorry. I was saying I think we do need to think about the question of national Pacifica programming apart from, although I agree with what Max said about having locally produced morning shows that, you know, deal with local issues that will attract audiences. I do think that we need to think about national Pacifica programming. I think that as opposed to trying to syndicate shows from one station to others, because I think that actually goes against having locally produced shows that focus on local issues, that we need to think about ways to come up with combining the resources and efforts of the different stations into producing some national program that deals with issues that are burning around the country. And maybe to start with special programming along those lines and then see if that can be built into you know, either a series or long-form documentaries or eventually, you know, a national show. But I think that that's something else we should strive for. We are in, you know, really important cities around the country, and we have access to affiliates who are all around the United States. And some kind of focused attention from those stations on, you know, for example, the question of police abuse or the question of, you know, housing and homelessness and gentrification displacement. These are issues that are burning all around the country. They're not just a local issue in one of our areas. So I think that it would behoove us to see if we can figure out a way to produce some nationally produced Pacifica programming that will, you know, take a look at those issues in a way that NPR is not prepared to, because we're Pacifica and we're looking at you know, the ways people are resisting displacement, the ways people are responding to you know, police killings and so on, in a way that maybe NPR is not going to be prepared to do. And I think that would create, you know, recreate the Pacifica brand in a way nationally that would also then build our local audiences.
Max it to the stack.
And who was that speaking just then?
That was Donald Goldmark.
No, I'm
Michael Novick from KPFK.
Good. If people could please identify themselves so we got used to your voices. Thank you.
Okay.
Max it to the stack.
So Michael, okay, Maxie.
Yeah, great points. I just wanted to address this notion of national programming from a couple angles. I was talking on the phone earlier today with Grace, our chair of the board, about this. And one of the things I told her is a model for a national program has already been articulated and shared with the stations. So we're ready to go. But the issue is funding. As someone who's produced national programming, it's not a cheap thing to do. And one of the things that is vital to creating national programming is having an editor who can edit from a national perspective, who can look at all the elements and make sure they make sense on a program that's going to air across the country beyond our five stations and into the affiliates. So one of the things I think will get us there is that you should know that we're moving very rapidly on not only moving towards CPB compliance, but more importantly and more immediately, getting our audits for fiscal year 17 and 18 completed. What that will allow, once that's completed, is us to be able to go after foundation support, grant support, and even major donor support from people who will be able to have a more accurate understanding of our financials, will be a more trusted resource, if you will, to invest in. And I do believe we'll be able to make the appeal to go after funding to support some national programming initiatives. Your ideas of what that should be encompassed in terms of content are excellent, and they're consistent with, I think, some of the ideas that were shared when I brought this concept up with stations, the GMs and the PDs. So everyone is wanting to get back to Pacifica producing national programming. Models are available. We just have to get ourselves in line for the funding to make it doable.
All right. Anybody on this issue?
Michael, again, I just wanted to reiterate one of the things I was suggesting is that we could start with specials and build our capacity to work towards, you know, an ongoing national show.
Yeah,
so
in fact,
maybe something to think about.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I meant to address that, too. I spoke to National Archives, Pacifica National Archives, and one of the exploratory conversations we have had of late is there are some documentary audio production houses that would love to get their hands on some of the archival material that we have and could create all kinds of amazing long-form documentary and specials out of that content. So that's one aspect that we certainly need to look at. The other thing is that there are some locally produced programs and even some network partnerships. I know BAI and PFW have partnered on a couple of programming initiatives. I know the LA and Berkeley station have done that as well. And I think there are some assets in the system that could be utilized in, as you say, as specials, whether they be one-offs or, you know, a series of programs. There are those opportunities. I think one of the things we have to do, and I'm going to be working with the stations to do, is take an inventory of what programs they think are national quality, and how can we make efforts to elevate some of those programs in that manner.
All right, this is Sheriff for the Stack. Yeah.
Sure.
About how programming is being sourced, in a sense. Is anybody, we keep talking about, like, Gen Z. Is anybody looking at YouTube for content?
Jim to the Stack. Shira, these are issues that we have discussed previously to this meeting tonight, and one of the things we talked about was precisely to collaborate and be in creatively using YouTube, since we all know that for younger people, for example, that's the greatest source for music, for example. So there are talked about. That's what we talked about with video streaming. That's what we talked with audio streaming. We passed resolutions on this. There are so many opportunities for us to cooperate now. For example, the whole question of the wall on the southern border, this whole debate that we've been going through as a society for 2 years now, this offers ways for every station to work together and put their own unique little spin or collected local talent to work collaboratively to do something that is along the lines of what I think Michael said, to do something different than NPR. And I should say to you, something in New York we're exploring actively now for 3 weeks is we want to do a happening event. I'm not sure if we're going to be able to pull it off. We're trying to do it in as large a space as possible and have the Mueller report read nonstop by A-list actors, but make it a mass democratic event where anybody can come in and read part of the Mueller report, and we're trying to get spaces from major universities. Now, I'm not saying that other stations should take that, but we regard this as a all we've gotten is one excited response after the next from people we've been talking to. So that's something we're thinking of pulling off, because of, you know, obviously all sorts of ways we can take advantage of that, because the publicity, if it's pulled off properly, would be stupendous for Pacifica. So that's something we're talking about doing here locally in New York, to do a read, a mass public read for 30 hours of the whole Mueller report nonstop.
So I would like to clarify what I was saying, and what you're saying sounds wonderful, but I just wanted to clarify what I meant was in terms of acquiring or connecting with personalities that speak to Gen Zers or Gen or the millennials even. I think that right now there's from my perspective, there's not too much programming that speaks to me when I'm on KPFA. I feel like there's a gulf, and my partner and a lot of the people I tend to work with, I tend to be actually older, like one of the older ones. And, you know, a couple of the programs that spoke to them, you know, for whatever reasons, you know, legitimate reasons, were pulled. And so there aren't a lot of, there's not too many programs. I think Democracy Now! Is really kind of shines in terms of its ability to be, to speak to people intergenerationally. But I, and so that's the reason why I was asking about, has anybody looked at YouTube in terms of connecting with personalities that are connecting to this audience already? Because there's huge numbers of young people on YouTube connecting with these what I'm going to call influencers. And there's no reason that we, in my opinion, couldn't be streaming, you know, like a national level show from there. And also, since they're already on YouTube, that will help drive people to, you know, Pacifica stations being on YouTube. You wouldn't have to start creating like a new audience base, because that audience base would already be there.
Right. We've talked about that at great length. The thing, Maxie can join in on this. We were talking precisely to do exactly what you're talking about. In other words, every station website have some sort of system organized where precisely shows like that that perhaps might violate FCC rules, but at least they're sort of off on YouTube, that people be aware that that's an additional service that we're working with, and not necessarily pushing them into terrestrial radio, but saying here is a whole different layer of programming going on that we want you to know about and we support and push. And have to figure out some way to interact with the analog and the digital in that way. And I think we were talking
maybe
about that
a clean
link for months. Go on, Shira.
I apologize. I actually, my brain, I spoke before my brain kicked in and realized I was speaking.
Go on.
Yeah, this is just stuff I would love to handle, because I realize it's getting late. So I just thought that I would speak up on that I feel like we, you know, I know people keep hearkening back to this, you know, the older days of Pacifica. And I would say that there is definitely a heart of young people who want to be there, but unfortunately, Pacifica's programming is, in my opinion, actually not progressive enough.
Ah, interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Maxie, to the stack on
that.
Yeah. Go on, Maxie.
Well, I'll yield for others who want to speak. I've spoken quite a bit. I can speak after some others chime in.
All right. Who else? Someone else?
Cliff to the stack.
Go on, Cliff.
On our station, even though I'm 80 years old, there's a serious problem with that. The listenership tends to be quite elderly. The programmers are quite elderly. And I've been trying to push that we ought to push our station into being a station of people, nobody over 30. and in a sense, we talk to younger people, but in a sense, it's elderly people interviewing them. And I really think that we ought to turn over entire hours to, you know, Black Lives Matter, not to be interviewed, but to have the program, or women's groups, or all these new things that are arising in our society. I mean, I was active in the 60s and 70s, and I really believe that beginning with Black Lives Matter, we're entering a new age like that. I think the next 10 years are going to be incredible. And I'm afraid we're going to be left in the dust because, as you mentioned about the YouTube, which I think is a great idea. But I just think that we ought to celebrate these people not by honoring them by having them on our shows, but actually honoring them by letting them have shows. So anyway, that's just my idea about things.
Anybody else to this? Before we get Max,
I'll second
there.
That. This is Michael. I just had one question I know about YouTube. Is a lot of the stuff on YouTube is commercial, particularly influences are influencing people about product, you know, with product placement. So I think we need to be selective along the lines of looking for progressive content that's, you know, not part of a commercial culture and commercial presentation.
That's correct, that's Michael, but the problem all the time is we have to think about how we're going to financially survive. That's the big dilemma.
Yeah.
That's the big conundrum.
Sure. But I think if we provide programming that people want to listen to, you know, they will find ways for them to support it.
Right.
Anyway.
Others on this issue? Maxie, you can jump in there.
Yeah, you know, this is such an important point to bring up, and I'm glad it was brought up, this notion of are we still relevant with respect to progressive topics, progressive movements, radical movements that are happening in the country. And one of the things that I've harped on and really advocated that we engage in is what is called rigorous or ruthlessly strategic community engagement work. The community advisory boards can play a role in that for sure, but there needs to be ascertainment work done. And whether it's exploring LGBTQ, whether it's exploring immigrant communities, whether it's exploring the ideas of youth, younger generations, whether it be from the 30s and 40s down to the teens, we have to do some ascertainment work to fundamentally and richly understand what actually is moving the needle for those communities. I think we get into this comfort zone that we think we know all about the community because we have a show or because we're involved with Pacifica. But the truth of the matter is the shifting sands of culture change constantly. And if you're not doing ascertainment work, I don't think you ever truly know what's going on in the different communities that are within the footprint of our signals. So to that end, you know, I want to, you know, again, when we the question was asked, what can this committee do that is an action-oriented approach? To me, emphasizing the structural due diligence around community engagement as a programming tool is something I think would be wonderful to see this committee advocate for, because if we institute rigorous methodology around community engagement to inform our programming, to me, it's not so much about giving people programs. It's about making sure that when we create programs that we're addressing the issues that matter to the communities that we intend to serve. And we do need to recalibrate and ask ourselves, why is it that our audience is over 65, if in fact that's the case? What can we do to be relevant to people in the middle 40s and 50s and 30s and maybe the 20s? I can go into a whole narrative about how young I think we can realistically get, but we are in a moment where young people are more civically engaged and socially and politically active than they've been in a long time. And I think there is a need for us to be relevant and to find ways to speak and represent and have them represented on our air. So I completely advocate for that. Are there anybody else on this?
Carol for the stack.
Go on, Carol.
Yeah, I really appreciate this question, Shira. And for me, one of the reasons I'm involved with Pacifica is because I feel like we are facing two huge, huge issues related to the future of life on the planet, which is imminent. And I think we can see that there is huge action around that with Extinction Rebellion and the Green New Deal and people taking different protests. And along with every day, there are events, climate events, all over the world that are horrific and emergencies. I mean, we certainly saw with California these huge fires that are not going to be going away. So to me, there's an importance. And the other part of it is the ongoing disenfranchisement of vulnerable populations. And it takes so many forms, from immigration to police brutality to prisons, and it's all about to women's issues, and it's all about disenfranchisement and voting rights. And so we know that there are these issues, and how do we organize around those issues? And I guess that's my perspective, but I wondered, Shira, if you would be willing to talk a little bit about what kind of programming you are envisioning.
I love what you just said. And for me, it's, you know, I'm very complacent. I'm going to be real. I tend to be just as complacent as everybody else in terms of my my listening taste and things like that. I'm just lucky to surround myself with people who push my edges. So I've been, you know, I've listened to, so I'm going to go back to YouTube because I just got like hip to this one person. And I think what's important, sorry, let me just say it, Jimmy Dore. The reason why I'm bringing up Jimmy Dore, it's really important, is that, especially when you're reading comments and you see like who he's connecting with, in terms of, I think we have this like push, and you're seeing this on the political level of, you know, you have Democrats, established Democrats, and you have people really trying to be more, progressing more toward the left and realizing that business as usual is not good enough. And people who are making, you know, really making those statements. And he was just one example that I've gotten, you know, hip to, where I was like, oh, this is crazy. I felt like, and I've gotten more and more into YouTube, I realized that we keep talking about like minority voices and stuff. And I don't mean this to mean race. I don't limit that kind of thought to race. I really just mean like things that aren't not being spoken about in the mainstream. And to me, that's what Pacifica was supposed to be about. And to me, to find that kind of programming, I realized, oh, it's out there. It's just on YouTube. It's not on any sort of mainstream method of getting my news, whether it's being in my car and being able to listen to my radio. I can't get it that way. I have to go to YouTube to find people having these conversations. And so that's why I'm personally saying I do not find Pacifica to be radical enough. I think Pacifica is still left, but just more to the right of where people are going in terms of being left and really saying things have to change, whether it's, you know, dealing with the climate crisis, or as somebody mentioned before, Black Lives Matter, et cetera, Me Too movements, et cetera, et cetera.
Does anyone else want to jump on this one?
Yeah, this is Donald from KBFA. And I don't want you to think the three of us from KBFA even talked about this stuff before, because we haven't. But we're obviously on the same page. I think Carol alluded to the second issue, which I would call the rollout of fascism in the United States and across the planet. And how do we address that on an ongoing way across the network, as well as the climate emergency? And I've actually had a couple of conversations locally, not with Shira and Carol about this, but at the station, about how do we start to address these two key issues, or these two key dynamics on a daily basis in our programming. So I just want to throw out a wild idea that's been cooking in my head for a couple of weeks, and it's sort of a knockoff of what Tom Hartman used to do with Bernie Sanders. I don't know if you're familiar with that, folks, but he used to have Bernie on every Friday morning on his show called Brunch with Bernie, before Bernie was Bernie and ran for president. And so those who listened to Hartman knew about Bernie Sanders, of course. So I want to propose that we think about having a weekly show once a week out of D.C., which would be rotating interviews with the four young women of color congresswomen, each taking 1 hour every week to talk about their perspective on what's happening. And I think it could be a wildly popular show for not only PFW, but for the network.
That's a brilliant idea.
Brilliant.
Go on. Who else wants to talk about that?
No, I said second that.
Okay. I just want to jump in on this. My personal feeling about this, I have kids.
So they listen to Jimmy Dore all the time. And they're always breaking my chops about that. And I sometimes think that one of the things we talked about, Maxie will remember, is that let's say you go to a Pacifica station website. Well, let's say on the right-hand side of the website, and this should be as active a channel as what we currently have on the analog. In other words, you have a YouTube constantly and be advertised on the analog. In other words, you know, you have a to the audience listening to our analog radio, oh, we're going to have the Jimmy Dore show up, and you, boom, pop it up on the right-hand side of the website. In other words, you encourage and drive people to use the digital communications systems that are now so prevalent. My personal feeling is that young people should take the whole place over, frankly, because the demographics here in New York and elsewhere at the whole stations, I know they're all different, but they tend to be baby boomers who were radicalized in the 60s. So all of us think back on how we began to listen to Pacifica in the 60s and 70s. It becomes like sort of, to some people, nostalgic good old days. And the problem with that is that people get very rigid. And I've seen that rigidity firsthand, not only here in New York, but elsewhere in the system for quite a long time. So I personally think that we need to encourage young people. Whenever I meet young people who I think have the talent to do something, I ask them to come down and work at BAI and basically think about replacing some of the older people down the road, because we really need that infusion of skilled, talented young people, because with digital communications technology that exists right now, they don't need Pacifica. They can go do it themselves on YouTube. They can do it themselves on podcasting. They don't need us. And frankly, sometimes they're right. And so that's the kind of dilemma we have to overcome. And I like that idea of doing this stuff down there with the congresswomen. But this is the kind of thing why they have. Look at their Twitter followers or their AOC's Instagram followers. That's the kind of technology and all these innovations that we're way behind on. And, you know, we're still back in the 20th century on these things in the systems. And we got to change that quick. And we got to really, and I like all these are great creative ideas. I love them. And, you know, we just got to sit there and do practical things and implement things. And, you know, I don't always agree with Maxie on things. There's other things I agree with him on. I do think we need to really explore vigorously these digital communications things and implement fresh programming ideas and see which ones work and stick.
Michael Dilisek.
Michael. Nancy.
Go on, Mike.
Was that okay for me to go ahead?
Yeah, go on.
Yeah, so I agree with that. I think that one of the things about YouTube is a lot of it is not particularly about high production values. It's about content that people can't get anywhere else. I mean, I'm in my 70s, but most of the people I work with are half my age or less. You know, I'm active with Black Lives Matter, with White People, Black Lives, If Not Now, which is Young U.S. Jews Against the Occupation, with you know, White People for Black Lives, and you know, people are constantly producing content in their activities that we need to connect to and get on the air. I think we should think about much more audiovisual production. I think we should think about, you know, streaming our stuff. Some shows here are streamed on Facebook, or, you know, maybe we want to try to put some of them on YouTube. And the fact that it's people talking to each other is not a barrier to attracting an audience on those media, because people look at a lot of people talking to each other. So, you know, I think to me the key is the content. And in particular, are we dealing with people who are offering solutions to problems? Because I think that too much of Pacifica programming is only about the problems and not about how people are dealing with them. And I think that to the extent that people are dealing with them, we need to share that more widely. And we have a platform, and we can add to our platform through social media. But we need to look at what people are doing about the problems that we're facing. I think that would really attract attention, attract audience, and give people a sense of dynamism about Pacifica and about
what we have to offer to, whether it's, permaculture, a lot of other things that people are doing day to day to deal with the climate crisis, to deal with policing, to deal with immigration, women, building solidarity with each other and challenging a lot of things. So I think that content is what will attract people back to Pacifica, because that's the kind of content that attracted people to Pacifica in the first place.
Nancy?
Mansoor would like to be on stack.
Okay, first Nancy, then Shira, then Mansoor. Go on.
Okay, thank you. This is a great discussion. This is Nancy. Great discussion, and I just want to say a couple things about what our unique opportunity is we're a radio, and we can't be manipulated by these algorithms that present to you programming that is in the same vein of what you've already been watching, which is what YouTube does. If you watch a certain program, it will present to you other YouTubes in that same vein. So even though there's a lot of stuff on YouTube, you tend to get more of what you watch of, and with the radio, the content is determined by the network. And one of the things that kept me coming back to WPFW was the fact that I heard stuff that I had never heard before, and I felt like I was being educated about things that I was never exposed to before. And I think since that is part of the mandate of being a nonprofit is education, is we will be successful if we can present programming that educates people around issues sure there's the issues of climate change, but there's opinions about it, and if you watch a certain person's show about climate change, you're going to tend to get more of the same, but you might not get other views on climate change. And we have the opportunity to present so many different issues that impact everyone, and topics that people have never heard of before that can have the power to change the world. I really like hearing Cheryl's opinions. I'm taking it a much younger person than myself and a lot of us. I think the reason that young people, my daughter too, they go to these sources is because they know how to get around without siloizing themselves, I guess. But there is that tendency to siloize when you use the social media, and we have an opportunity to avoid that.
Okay. Shira.
Just wanted to say again, in terms of being action oriented, I love what the last person, somebody had said before that, and then I am hoping that we can learn to be more cooperative in how we progress. And so I can't remember who said, I apologize because I don't know names and voices yet, but in terms of how do we start to utilize each other's like resources for the better of the group, for instance, having a show out of WBAI and that we can produce and it be showed, played local, nationally. And going along those lines, I'm hoping that maybe we can all work together so that maybe we have a representative at the affiliates meeting, I guess, task force, because if there's, you know, suitable affiliate programming, I think that should definitely be on our radar. I haven't listened to it, but for instance, there was an award that was given, I read in like the Pacifica newsletter, to a youth LGBTQ program. And so looking at that and just, you know, trying to see like this, you know, is there this kind of programming that can maybe be used nationwide would be helpful.
Right. Mansoor.
Okay. Thank you, Jim. And thank you, everybody. Okay. This is Mansoor from KPFK. I want to just sort of give an overview of what I have heard so far. So I appreciate what Mr. Jackson have said about having their meetings with his meetings with the PDs and general managers. And I want to actually challenge this committee with a few things. Number one, would this committee be willing to invite program directors to come on this committee meeting? It's once a month. Rather than looping around things, have them hear what we have to say or have them have the PDs to correct us to what we don't know. And then number two, would we let the PDs to do their jobs? In other words, we have a program director at KPFK, Mr. Kevin Fleming, and he is hired. He's 30 years experience in the field. He's hired to do a job as a program director. Now, I do have my favorites and my dislikes, which is really fantastic about the programs on KPFK and Pacifica. Allows me to turn things off and turn them back on. But at the same time, would I be able to, after expressing my dislike of a show, would I still be okay to let the program director to do his or her job? Okay, so that's two things. Number three, I want to know if we are, as a institution, as a foundation, and as the urgency of the time that is imposing itself on us, the election 2020 is coming up, the environmental issues are coming up, the healthcare issues are prevalent, the new Green Deal movements are happening everywhere. Are we willing to have national programmings that that deals with these issues on a weekly basis or maybe on a daily basis? If we want to get out of the doldrum that we are in, to my understanding, and I could be corrected, that the one of the four top issues are environmental issues, the Green New Deals, healthcare, presidential elections, and environment, and so on. So that's what I want to put a challenge to this body. What does this committee wants to really do? And thank you very much for listening.
Thank you, Mansoor. I should add that we always were willing to invite PDs to come on to the calls. We just got so busy that we didn't have time to do that, but that's a brilliant idea. And then the resolutions we passed on audio and visual and video streaming were precisely to deal with the question of terrestrial radio versus digital means of communication, because I do think that weekly coverage of these issues can not interrupt the local programming grid, but can basically be a supplement to it. And that's where we passed the resolution. I don't know how well they did, but the idea was that May Day show in Berkeley. And the idea of it was what all of us on the committee agreed upon, that we felt that May Day should be covered, period. And, you know, let's work out the kinks. So I agree 100% that we should be doing weekly or biweekly looks in depth, cooperating nationally through digital communications and taking advantage of the kind of things that Shira says. Because I'd like to see a lot more younger people participating with us on these calls. I'd like to see the affiliates participating with us on these calls. And for sure, we need to think very quickly how the whole network is going to work together to deal with the 2020 election, because it's here already, and we can do creative things that a lot of the networks cannot do, and I think we should implement them and think about them and do it.
Jim, may I add one point, if you don't mind, or if the body doesn't mind? Okay, thank you. Okay, I think I read an email from you that you advocating for broadcasting the presidential debates and speeches, and I'm wholeheartedly agree with that concept, and here's why. Because of this election has to deal with not Trump, but anybody else, and there are 17, most probably would be 20 candidates running for Democratic Party nominee. So all the money that we used to get, all those monies going to all these candidates. And it's going to, I really have fear for next year. As the result of 20 candidates running for presidency and people making donation in California especially makes the largest donation to all the candidates, I really have fear that we might not be able to handle our financial situation next year. However, there is a good deal that we might be able to, as an educational institution, to broadcast presidential speeches and debates for two reasons. Number one, not all of us can be at those debates, filming them, recording them to broadcast them, or segment broadcasting. Number two, I know they do ask for money. If we coordinate with those campaigns, then when are you going to pitch for money? We can actually pitch for money for ourselves on the airwaves while we're broadcasting live stuff. And that way, I'll just give you an example. In Los Angeles, Bernie Sanders gave a talk at downtown City Hall, and there were 25,000, 30,000 people there. However, not too many from Orange County. Now,
right.
My proposal is to broadcast that live. We'll get it to Orange County, to Riverside County, to Oxnard County, which are 40, 50, 60 miles away, and we can bring money in. And not only that, but also expand our number of listeners. And this is what I really would like this committee to think about. And we can do it, and we can do it according to FCCs and according to the non-partisanship. But we can do this thing in order to not only survive this year and next year, but to expand our listenership. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you. Does anybody else? We only have about...
Yeah, this is Donald for the stack.
Go on, Donald.
Yeah, I have a suggestion. There were a lot of really good thoughts and ideas put out here this evening. I would really encourage all of us who made statements or put out ideas to write them up and send them to Jim so that everybody can look at them on paper and we can flesh them out over the next week or two, so we can really begin to examine a strategy for improving and expanding programming. And I do want to use that word strategy because I think we need to be strategic about what we want to see happen. Thanks.
Michael to the stack. Yeah. One thing I'm hoping you can maybe generate a list of everybody on the committee and send it to everybody on the committee so we're all aware of who is and how to reach them. The other is in response to partly to what Mansoor just said. I think we need to be careful. I understood he said, you know, we don't want to get involved with partisan things, but a lot of the debates are run by the parties under regulations that essentially exclude people from the debates. So I think we have to be careful about that. And I think we, you know, I know several times Democracy Now! Has run debates with cutaways for other people to put their content in. So I think we might want to think about something like that, again, where people can get something they're not going to get on a national public radio station. Because we're expanding the parameters of the debate beyond what the corporate parties want to allow.
Anybody else in the stack?
Carol for the stack.
Go on, Carol.
Well, this is a different issue, but it's just kind of going back to, I think there was a request for sending out a list of everybody. And I don't know if, Jim, if you have everybody who has been elected to this committee, but if you don't, maybe each of us, I think we're covered for KPFA because we have all four people here, but if anybody is from any other station and you know other people who have been elected to this committee who are not on this call, could you send the contact information to Otis and to Jim with their phone numbers and email addresses so we can have a full list?
Okay. Anybody else who's got?
Hey, this is James for the SAC.
Yes, Jimbo.
This is James from WBAI.
Yes, sir.
We've been having a difficult time at WBAI, and we have a feeling that we're in a transition period right now, and this call has just encouraged me very much. I'm looking very much forward to working on this committee, and I'm feeling optimistic about our future.
Jim, I should add that this committee was one of the big turn-ons that people would always comment about when they were in the middle of coming from a PNB meeting.
Very good.
We always was that. And I should add something that Nancy said about silo-izing. I think that we're disconnected from the arts community of the United States. And part of what has happened in the past 30 years, is that, our greatest allies in New York City, which I'm finding out right now, in terms of trying to sell this idea of the Mueller report being read as a happening type event, is the artistic community. And it just kills me. And our finalizing has to move beyond just simply political stuff, but we have to also do other things to find out too. And that means we have to work with...
You're breaking up. You're breaking up there. We're losing you.
Anyway, where are we at now?
James, we lost you, Jim. We lost you there. Repeat it.
Oh, I said, the artistic communities in the every signal area we work in are our great allies, and we have to just not be thinking about political issues, which I have a lot of opinions about, but we have to think about the wider cultural embracing of everything going on in our local signal areas, which we, I think, as stations do not, I will say KPFA is probably a good example of how they do a good job, but all the signal areas have to really do that and change the way how we're doing. We just got to get out of our silos. And this is an opportunity right now with this terrible situation we're in as Americans that we can do that. But I think we can do it and do a job that can really be a help to the whole population of this country and the world. And on that note, why don't we call it a night?
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for sharing. Good night.
Thank you, everyone. Appreciate it.
All right,
yeah,
thank you,
everybody.
So thank you. Yeah, bye-bye.
Hey, Tim, are you still on?
I think Jim Dingman hung up.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.